Welcome to Big Foamy Head, Show 70, Lawfully Beer Show.
Hard times shine everywhere you go. Has it harder than ever been before? And the people are drifting from door to door, but they can't find no heaven. I don't care where they go. Oh, 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 oh. Let me tell you, people, just before I go, these hard times kill you, just dry long and slow. Oh, when you hear me singing my lonesome song, this hard time will last us so very long. Oh, 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 oh. If I ever get on this killing flow, I'll never get down this low. Long, 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 I'll never get down this low no more. And you say you had money, but you best be sure, 'cause these hard times will drive you from door to door. Oh,
sound of one beer popping. We were just listening to our
moment.
A what?
That's Zen, the sound of one hand clapping.
That's it.
That's the sound
you
of one beer.
You caught that.
Yeah.
That's the sound of one beer popping. I'm getting all up in my Zen. I don't know whether it's this great Zen-like beer we have or the...
We don't know. We were asked to evaluate this. It's a something that Jerry and Craig from the Brew Bubbas have shipped out to several podcasts. And they were given kits from a place called Brew House.
Mm-hmm.
And you had done a little bit of research. I forget where they're out of.
They are...
I think they're Canadians.
Yeah, they are, because they spell stuff funny.
that's the first giveaway.
But it's at thebrewhouse.com, and the idea is it's a bunch of wort that you throw yeast in, and you got a beer.
Yeah, so they've malted all the grains, they've done the boil, they've added the hop additions, they've done everything that a brewer would typically do, and then they seal it in a hermetically sealed bag or antiseptic conditions and ship it off.
Ship it off to you.
So all you have to do is cool it to a decent pitching temperature, pour it into a fermenter like a glass carboy, add some yeast.
You're good to go.
Put your bubbler on it and tell everybody you brewed some beer.
Which you sort of did.
Yeah.
The we were looking through the site. They've got recipes for taking their recipe and cranking it up a notch.
Doctoring it up a bit.
So we're drinking the Honey Blonde kit, we assume. It had HB on it, and the only beer they have is Honey Blonde with HB. Not bad.
That's good.
Yeah. It's good. I mean, I'm not tasting anything weird. There's not much carbonation. And I don't know whether it's the bottle, the shipping, or the kit.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be their fault. That was
no.
That would be, whatever the bottling conditions were.
Right, which you are responsible for.
Right, so the brewer is responsible for that. Or the yeast pitcher.
Yeah, in this case. Pitcher. But you can check them out.
Okay, great idea. Yeah. I think they ship 4-gallon batches and probably some liter equivalent to that.
Yeah, it's at thebrewhouse.com. Check it out. And
if you're in a rush to make some beer, just go buy the kit.
Yeah, not a bad. I haven't seen pricing yet, so can't vouch on the economy of scale, whether this is still a value or not.
To step up from a Mr. Beer kit.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I got to tell you, from my experience with an all-concentrate kit, that god-awful Scottish ale I made that tasted like plastic. Yeah.
That was a no-boil kit, right?
It was a no-boil kit. So that would be like one notch below this. I had to add water, and I had to heat it up.
That was concentrated.
Yeah, it was concentrated. So this is not concentrated. It's just a big bag of wort, and you just throw yeast in, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Great entry point. So I want to thank the Brew Bubbas, Craig and Jerry, for saying this to us and thinking about us. And we also need to thank them very kindly for their doing a show on our show.
Their lavish praise of their episode 15.
Yeah. You know, us podcasters are always patting each other on the back,
sure,
pretty much, but never a bad word to say between all of us. But these guys really are quite generous and quite kind.
Yeah. And very much appreciated.
Very much appreciated. So
I listened to it all day today, and yeah, very nice. Well, we have a special guest. You heard him on the intro, and that was Chris Thomas King. Now, you know Chris Thomas King. You just may not be sure how, but we're going to tell you how.
Chris Thomas King was born in 1962 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. His father was Tabby Thomas. He was also a blues musician during the 60s. He has 7 contemporary blues albums to his credit, and he's an actor. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? In 2000 is his acting debut.
And the song that we led off with was Hard Time Killin' Floor, and that was from the Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack. And he's been in the movie Ray, and several others. It's if you check out his website, christhomasking.com, you can learn a lot more about him. And we were fortunate enough to get some time with him, and what was going to be a 5-minute interview turned out to be over half an hour long. Chris is very passionate about the blues and about many things, as you're about to find out. And we called him up, shot the breeze with him, and got his take on all kinds of things. So let me just dive right in. So we're talking with Chris Thomas King, nominated for Best Blues Song of the Year for the Blues Music Awards coming up in May. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Now, you're out in Los Angeles working. Are you recording, or what are you up to?
I'm out here for series of meetings.
Okay, well, good for you. I guess you got to take care of some business in between playing and everything.
Yeah, to be specific, I'm at Book Soup on Sunset, and it's kind of strange to look across the street and not see Tunnel Records anymore. Makes you wonder what it's coming to, you know?
Yeah, where are records going?
Yeah, I mean, the record business is going through some changes, and retail stores and are going out of business. You know, places that sell CDs specifically, like the Tower Records type of places, they're disappearing and or have disappeared. And all that's left is iTunes, Best Buy, and Walmart, mall stores, which really don't carry a lot of blues.
Yeah, you're right. And I guess the flip side of that is, because of the internet, you've got a lot more accessibility for artists who can't get a deal or can't showcase their music any other way. Is kind of a nice medium to be able to put things out in front of a population you used to not be able to get in front of.
Well, in theory, yes, but if you're talking about the blues audience, most of them don't have iPods and don't even know how to download an email, let alone a CD.
Yeah, well, that's true.
They're just not tech savvy, and they're not and they pride themselves in not being tech savvy. So it's getting harder and harder for, you know, blues labels and blues artists to reach their audience.
Well, we've always maintained the best way to hear the blues is standing in front of the artist. Seeing it live is it's an experience.
I think that's true. I think that's very true. And what I say about the record business as a whole, and what I say about, if you hear that noise, I'm crossing Sunset right now, trying to get into a quiet little coffee spot across the street. What I'm saying about the record business in general, I mean, I've been pretty fortunate in my career, you know, to have some successes. I have my own label, 21st Century Blues Records, you know, and I have distribution, you know, nationally and everything with my label, which is a lot of hard work, but it's a rare thing, I think, for a blues artist. But, you know, so I've had some successes, but, you know, the thing about myself is that I'm just not just interested in, you know, in other words, now we got a little quiet. I get to the party and I'm the only one there. And it doesn't have to be that way. And I wish it wasn't that way, but there's, you know, once you get to a point where you kind of, you know, sell a certain amount of records to have a certain amount of success, you kind of find yourself not, I mean, the blues genre is just such a small genre, it really can't support the success story, you know. And then again, if you have some success, a lot of blues festivals and blues people that work in that genre, they don't like to celebrate successes. They usually like to celebrate the hard luck story, or the guy who's, you know, got only a few months to live, or, you know, he's got some kind of part they want to have the benefit. And I think because, I'm going to say this and I'll talk about something else, but my problem with the genre is that the poster boy for the blues always have to be the artist or a woman, male, that's in need, because they want to use that image to raise money, because they're mostly nonprofit organizations that run the blues. And so the blues is always promoted as this, like this commercial in Africa where they have the kids with the flies all over them and they're saying, send money, you know. And they know if they cross the street over there, they probably can go into a Starbucks or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they don't show one side of it, and it hurts the blues. Because when I come out to Los Angeles, deals or to do some things like that and grow my label, grow some opportunities, and you use the word, but they don't want to hear about it, you know, because...
Yeah, sad, depressing, yeah.
I know for a fact that I was involved in Old Brother Where Art Thou, which is one of the biggest soundtracks this century, you know. Also, Ray, you know, was a phenomenal success. And these things had blues all over them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't tell me that it doesn't sell, but does the blues genre celebrate those things or... make it known that, hey, look, the blues is making money for people. The blues can sell.
Side by side. Me and the blues, we walking side by side. I'm gonna beat my little woman until I feel satisfied. Follow me everywhere I go. Well, I'm gonna get religion. I'm going down to the church to pray. I said, get down on my knees. Lord, please take these blues away. Won't be leaving you no more.
That was Chris Thomas King, Soon This Morning Blues, from his first album.
Now we're going to try the beer. That's the namesake of the show.
There it is.
We need to give a special thanks to James Spencer, basicbrewing.com. He provides this to us.
And this is the La Folie
from New Belgium Brewing Company.
And you've got some specs on this guy. And this is one of my favorite types of beer.
I don't really have a lot of specs. I have a lot of marketing speak.
Yeah. Says brewed in the Flanders red ale style, which I've also seen as called a brown ale or old brown. There's a couple of different things, but the idea behind it is that it's got a second fermentation with a lactic, with a yeast strain that produces a lactic acid.
Yeah, it says La Folie is New Belgium's brewing interpretation of a traditional Belgian sour brown. This unique beer has been peacefully aging in oaken barrels for several years. When you uncork La Folie, it's best to let it breathe before drinking. This will not only improve the bouquet, but also increase the beer's temperature, providing a more complex taste and body. Well, we're not going to do that, are we?
Well, we'll let it sit for a few seconds. But it's got a nose right off the bat. Mm-hmm. You can smell. And I refer to this as pucker beer because it's tart. It's very tart. And the lactic acid in here, it's not lactose like milk. It's lactic like sweat. And it's a tart, tangy taste, and unfortunately, it is a very distinct taste.
Okay.
And it puckers you a little bit. But unfortunately, some of the terms used to describe this is horsey and sweat.
Yeah.
but in a good way.
It says La Folie being redolent of Belgium's Rodenbach Flemish red ale. It's produced by the brewery where our master brewer, Pierre Bouquert, hails from. The idea was to create an intentionally sour effect, though not as intense as that in the famous Belgian beer Rodenbach. The finished beer, called La Folie, has a dark pinkish amber color, a sustained bead. I don't know what a sustained bead is.
The lacing, perhaps, on the edge?
I don't know. A toffee-like start, then apple and passion fruit notes.
Mm-hmm. It will pucker you up.
It says leave it to breathe for 10 minutes. During that period, firmness and acidity seem to come to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
Quite sour and finished, but a beautifully balanced beer.
But I love that. I mean, that's it's just a unique
anything
style.
That's completely distinct,
yeah,
out on its own,
yeah,
kind of like the artist that we're interviewing today.
Yep.
You know, somebody is staying out there doing his own thing, you know, this beer is definitely that also.
Very tasty, and this is what we're drinking throughout the show. So we we're just listening to Soon This Morning Blues. It is from his first album, which we were talking about earlier. Our Hooli Records is a they're sort of a documentarian. Basically, they go out and they record anybody they can find who is a purveyor of the blues. They've done this forever. Document Records, Library of Congress, Smithsonian, all these guys. So there's a treasure trove of blues music out there. Well, this next segment, we're going to hear a little bit more about how Chris came from point A, you know, a little guy being stuck in a studio recording some songs because Smithsonian somehow heard of him, to being in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou and Ray, and as he's got an acting career essentially thrust upon him. He didn't go out there looking for work. He was discovered by his music. And if you look on some of the reviews, when the directors, Joel Cohen, one of the Cohen brothers that did Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Joel Cohen. We'll look that up. God, we suck at knowing who made a movie.
You keep wanting to attribute movies to the Coen brothers.
It's somebody. I think it's Joel Cohen.
I believe they did There's Something About Mary, right?
Yeah. Well, I like that movie.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
But they didn't do The Matrix. And
all right, I'll look at it. It was Joel somebody. I know that. But anyway, they heard him singing on these on one of his mini CDs. And singing in an older blues style. So they cast him as Tommy Johnson, who allegedly sold his soul to the devil. Now, that's also attributed to Robert Johnson at the Crossroads.
At the Crossroads, right.
They both allegedly did this, but Tommy was the only one who talked about it. Robert didn't, and that's the difference. And so the song that we opened the show with, Hard Time Killing Floor Blues, that was from the soundtrack. And then you heard this earlier thing. And we're going to listen to some more of the interview and hear about how I got from here to there. I was spending a lot of time going through and just sampling from the different albums and that I could find. Your 1986 album, you had a lot of original stuff, but you had some kind of older blues, and then went on, and you just gone in a just kind of tried directions, it seems like. And but still, they all retain that underlying idea.
Yeah, I mean, my first album, you know, I mean, I come out of tradition of blues, you know what I mean? My first album came about the same way Lead Belly Muddy Waters got their first recording opportunity through a folklorist. So it had nothing to do with whether or not it was going to be something, you know, commercially successful. It was more like, we should record this kid because he's got this fresh sound or whatever, and we should record him. Document, you know, what he's doing. And that's what the folklorist from the Smithsonian that gave me my first, wrote some letters on to some different people. Well, one of the people he wrote a letter to was Rick Strackwitz at our Hooli. You know, Strackwitz wrote to me in, I think, around 84, 85, asking if I was, if I had enough material for an album, he would love to release it. And the thing about that album, it was the first recording that, the first song that I recorded as a solo artist was a little song called Soon This Morning Blues, which I still
yep.
on my set.
Yeah.
With Drum Machine,
mm-hmm.
you know, back in 1984, and it was the first blues recording to be done with it, and I don't think Chris Strackwitz even knew,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
that it was done that way, and I didn't have any master plan to change the blues sound or anything or to bring it into the future, but that's just the only drums the guy had at his studio, so that's what we used, and then the rest of the album, I performed all the instruments myself on it. And that was my first recording. And you're right, it was all original, but it was, you know, there was 12-bar blues and stuff on there. I did an album, I think, that was not released with Antones in 1987. I did a recording. I don't even know what happened to the tape. I don't even think it was all that great myself, personally. But it wasn't released. So when people heard me again, it was 1990 with Cry the Prophet. And I was with High Tone / Warner Brothers Records. And they didn't hear my development between, my recorded development between 86 and 1990. It seemed like a leap. But when I began recording with High Tone, they were trying to make me in the image of Robert Cray, I think, because they'd had a big success. They had a formula or something.
Yeah, that was that whole Strong Persuader series, right? That he came out. Yeah, he had like three in a row or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but by the time 1990 came about, I was ready to add some rap poetry and stuff in some of my songs, and I was being told that I couldn't add that, or I couldn't do it, and my beats were, you know, relying instead on the shuffle, which is what everybody was kind of doing. I was starting to use funk drumming, you know, or some James Brown type grooves on my blues song, guitar singing and playing. So the rhythm of my music was changing, and I wanted to say more with my lyrics, you know, other than just repeating the verse, you know, repeating the lines like you can only just say about eight sentences in a blues, in a traditional blues song. In a rap song, you got, man, three or four pages of stuff. So I wrote some songs. One of the songs I wrote was called 21st Century Blues around 1989, and I was recording this stuff for Warner at the time, and I felt that this was the blues that, you know, was representing me and my generation, and it was a very natural progression for me. But, man, it caused all kinds of hell, you know, for me and everybody around me, because they just didn't understand where it was going, or, you know, they just didn't. They were looking to the past to compare me to Jimi Hendrix, the next Robert Cray, the next Muddy Waters, the next somebody.
They're looking for the slot to put you in.
They were looking forward, saying, well, this guy's maybe an original, or the first, or the guy that's going to, you know, find, you know, make the music, you know, tomorrow. And so I caught a lot of hell and a lot of backlash and stuff, and was banned pretty much from a lot of festivals and things. I ended up living in Europe for a few years, but when I came back to America, I was able to get into the film business. And I had a big success with Old Brother, and that pretty much solidified me in America and gave me an opportunity to reach not just the blues audience, which I was already kind of well known there, making a living, so to speak. But it gave me an opportunity to reach a much wider audience and a much younger audience than most blues artists are able to reach into. So what you have with me is one of the few guys through the hip-hop blues records I've made and through the movies I've done, I think I have more fans, more face recognition or name recognition or sound recognition in the hip-hop generation than any other blues artist that's working today.
Yeah, I can give you a solid proof of that. I was mentioning to my wife that I was going to interview you, and she wasn't really that familiar with your work. And my 19-year-old daughter said, oh, yeah, he was in Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
In this world of instant gratification, you know, it's a genre of music or a style of music that takes a long time, you know, to develop and to become into your own or whatever, or to find your voice with it. And I think kids today just don't have that kind of patience. You know
yeah.
what I mean? They're not going to pick up a guitar and then maybe 8 years later be able to make a play a chord, you know what I mean? So it takes a long process to come into your own as a blues artist, you know. But and I really, when I look over my shows, I really don't see young people, you know, anybody coming behind me, you know. I even signed a couple of young bands. I signed a band to my label out of England, a really good group called New Blues, but they were doing taking some of the British blues rock.
Yeah.
And they had added, you know, some hip hop elements to it, which I thought was really, really well done. And I signed them to my label. And I did another act called the TV Boys from the Night Ward, you know, where they were doing some blues, some poetry, you know. And, but those albums, had a tough time finding an audience at Forest Blues show, because even though there are some fans that are looking for something new, you know, most people just really want to buy the reissues or soundalikes, you know. And so if you don't have a name already, you're not a known entity, it's hard to record out for anybody, for me or anybody, and get the store to actually order a bunch of copies and have people come in and buy it. It's really hard to establish anybody as far as blues go, or jazz, anything like that, in this new music business we're in. It's very, very tough.
There's no soul in this shell. I'm a long-lost child, can tell. You're a beautiful angel with a broken wing. Yeah. I see a storm coming from the shore. I'm dying on this killing floor, and with my final breath, to you I sing. Swing down, sweet chariot, I'm ready to go home. You run to look for me, baby, I'll be gone. Rain, the angel. Rain.
Thank you.
So that was Raining Angels, Chris Thomas King, and that was from his CD Roots, the Soul of Chris Thomas King.
Nice instrumental song.
Very, very good.
Great melody.
Yeah, guy can sing. And he plays all these instruments, too.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Yeah. He plays. He's extremely talented. He does work with a lot of accomplished musicians, but most of his productions are done in his studio in Louisiana, which you're going to hear in this next segment about how he lost everything in Katrina. And if you think what you've heard so far is good, you hadn't heard nothing yet. But speaking of something good, man.
We've given the La Folie the requisite 10 minutes to breathe, and wow. Man. That's an awesome beer.
It gets better.
Yeah.
It gets better. This is one of those
that can... sour.
Yeah. It can warm up a little, you know? And it now I'm getting, since it's set here, I'm getting a... I wouldn't call it a burn, but more of the sensation, you know, the sourness of it all.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I love a good sour.
Think of a good sour candy, you know, like the Atomic Kids or whatever they call them.
Yeah.
Garbage Pail Kids, I don't know.
But it's beer.
Yeah.
But it's beer. So it's good.
Well, speaking of good beer.
Hey, good. Do a follow-up on the celebration. That was the thing that Rick Sellers from Pacific Brew News was promoting with his brew club, the Gold Country Brewers Association.
Right.
And apparently the winner, Jim, I'm going to script the name, Langlois, he won the best of shows, so he got like 10 pounds of fresh hops, and I know that Rick is trying to get out of his house because it's quite large.
Yeah, that's a lot of hops.
Amongst other winnings, but he took the best of show, and he had a wee heavy, and apparently listens to Big Foamy Head, so here's a shout-out to Jim.
Yeah,
congratulations Jim.
And I guess everybody else sucked, right?
Yeah, everyone else sucked. Now, there were two other winning spots. It was like this best of show, second mention or first mention, something like that. I didn't quite look it up. But I placed second in my two categories that I contributed beers to, and pretty happy about that.
We're going to put a picture of the trophy you get up on the website, right?
That'd be a picture of air.
Which, you know, you're downplaying this. It's a great achievement. You placed second in two categories, right?
Well, I'm surprised submitting an Imperial IPA to a California Brewers Association or a brew club to come in second with that.
That's high praise. They're all about hops over there.
Yeah, you would expect the extremely super-duper hopped, you know.
Well, your Magnum 90 that you submitted, are we allowed to say what it is?
Sure.
It's a Dogfish 90 clone.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
With Magnum hops instead of Warrior hops.
It's great. And, I was up there sniffing around, bumming a few off of you the other day. I mean, it's great. You know how we like the Dogfish 90? This is as good, if not better. I love
the beer I brewed on Johnny Max's video.
Uh-huh.
Beer with Rick.
So. Note to listeners, you can watch this.
You can watch it, but very few people will taste it because there ain't that many.
I know. It goes quick when it's that good. Yeah. But very good. And then your other beer, the Doppelbock.
The Lent and Later.
Lent and Later.
Took second place also.
Very good.
So happy about that. That's the only second competition I've joined.
That's right.
First competition, it took me months to find out what my score was, and it wasn't a great score. I guess it was good beer, but not a great beer.
But, you know, practice, right?
Practice.
And you get
so
there.
That's all the business I had to take care of.
Well, it's congratulations on your enormous victory, triumphing over all of those many people.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, you're downplaying it.
Second place
good.
In two categories.
It's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. Don't downplay
it. I'm happy.
You did good. And we're going to enjoy some more of this fine beer and let you listen to a little bit more about Chris King. And
this is when we start getting into
Hurricane
Katrina and stuff like that.
Right? An incident
and
happened.
And his new album.
And we all remember Katrina occurring. And depending on where you live in the country.
You can't possibly forget because it's constantly drug out. Yeah,
But it's still very vivid and very real for people who were in the Louisiana area. And I've driven through that area recently. It's still not done. I mean, there is a lot of scandal associated with it. Government funds gone missing. A lot of things, promises made but not kept. A lot of half-hearted efforts, and it's just still kind of a blight on the shores down there. And Chris Thomas King he's from that area. He's from New Orleans, and had a studio. Which was essentially, a lot of it was just destroyed and completely washed away by Katrina. He got out quick enough so his family was not harmed. And it affected him so personally, and being a blues man, that's what he does best. And he wrote about it. And so you've heard these songs, and you know he's a passionate fellow, quiet spoken until he sings, and then his voice kind of lifts up. Well, you're going to hear a little different in an even more personal note when he talks about the subject and when he sings about it. So let's take a listen.
We were talking earlier about the inspiration for things. You know, people draw on their life experiences typically for blues, or they, like you said, they use the standards and put out their own interpretation. This the newest album of yours, Rise, it's based on your dealings with Hurricane Katrina, which affected many, many people. But for you, you took it really personally. And this is a thing I noticed is, you know, there's a lot of songs out there that people sing repeatedly. St. James Infirmary is one of them. Everybody does that. Everybody tries to put their own twist on it. But I was listening to your version of it from Rise, and there's a difference. Because you took this song and adapted the whole death aspect of it and directly tied it into the death and destruction of Katrina, I heard a difference in this album and all of your other albums combined. This one seems a lot more personal.
Well, you're right. It was the most personal recording I made. It was it's kind of cliche to say it was therapeutic for me and all of that, but, you know, I've said that before, but, you know, I didn't really, you know, you think you're in love until you actually are bitten, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, that Rise was a very personal record because I lost my home in Katrina. You know, I mean, you just can't imagine waking up one morning and then the city that you lived in is no longer this, you know? I mean, everybody's gone. The police are gone, the government is gone, the stores, you know, there's nobody, the birds, the bugs, the mosquitoes, the dogs, cats. I was standing in New Orleans, and so dark on St. Charles, and all the trees were down. And when I say all, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, there was total devastation. And there wasn't a sound in the air, there wasn't a light for miles, you know, and I'm in the middle of the city. The heart of the city, where the streetcars run. And there wasn't any sign of life, you know, that I could see, you know, for as far as I looked, you know. It was just complete darkness. I couldn't even see my hand in front of my face. And this was the night before President Bush was speaking from Jackson Square. That same night when he was speaking, I was sleeping in my car, you know, in a rental car about just a couple of blocks away. And, it was so eerie and so, I tried to verbalize that or sing about that in the song Fate as a verse that I say it's so dark, you know, here. I can't even see the Big Easy wash away. And I'll never forget that. It was like a science fiction movie.
Standing on rooftops, oh, 12 feet of water all around. Nobody's coming for us. They left us here to drown. My old neighbor, oh, you see, she just floated on by. Face down in dirty water, it's still rising high. With your burden, look no farther. I'll
dad, 'cause I'm your brother. We got to raise the children that got no mothers. We got to have a little faith in one another. President Bush flying round, oh, looking down on us from the air. They say he pitied the poor people, but does he really care? Wading round in this muddy water, oh, feel like I'm lost at sea. Seems like the heavens been crying its tears down on me. With your burden, look no farther. I'll be there, you know I'm your brother. We got to raise the children that got no mothers. They have a little faith in each other.
Drive in front of you. Just come out of nowhere, like it's black dark, and you don't hear anything. Then all of a sudden, you see an army tank with a couple of guys with machine guns just ride right on by. It's like, where am I? You know, is this America? You know.
Yeah.
And so Katrina happened in New Orleans, and then you know it got worse from there. I mean, because the aftermath of Katrina, which people aren't really hearing about. You know, what the banks are doing to people's property down there. You know, people's houses washed away, but they still have mortgages, and all the litigation that's going on, and the money from Washington, it disappeared on the way to Louisiana somehow. that nobody can seem to locate it. I mean, like I said, you know, Katrina happened and it got worse, but when your house blew away, I'm a blues artist. I mean, that's what I do. That's when I go into a phone booth and put on my cape, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Pick up my guitar, you know, and sing a song, you know. I mean, you had like guys like Charlie Patton singing about the floods, you know, at the early, you know, in the 1920s or whatever. Well, that's what a blues man do, you know. You sing about those kind of things and put into music people's emotions and things. They might not be able to verbalize it quite themselves or have a voice to do it, but when they hear your music, you know, they relate to it in a subconscious or a deeper way and say, hey, you know, that album not only was therapeutic for me, but hopefully it helped a lot of people that heard it, that dealt with that tragedy, and people that didn't deal with it. I think it's something universal about loss, you know, that everybody can relate to. Everybody's lost loved ones or will lose loved ones. And everybody, and another thing about Katrina is that material, when all that washed away overnight, you know, you start learning what's real, you know, what's really a value and what's really important. Those songs, What Would Jesus Do, was recorded in Nashville. People were still outside the convention center in New Orleans when I recorded that film. I evacuated with my family like everybody else, and I ended up in Nashville because I had a previous performance there, scheduled there, and I wasn't going to come. But then they told me to, you know, bring the family, and, you know, people were offering me, you know, places to stay. And, you know, the Nashville community was really welcoming to me. And they said, what can we do for you? I said, get me into a studio. And so they got me in a studio that Saturday night. Katrina happened on Monday. That Saturday night, about 3 a.m., I was in a studio with some really fantastic musicians. And we recorded What Would Jesus Do? And so if that song has an emotional ring to it, it does, because everybody involved in the session, you know, was moved emotionally, including myself, of course.
Tell me, America, what would Jesus do? Tell me, what would Jesus do? If he had to walk a mile in my shoes, would he steal food to feed the hungry and the poor? If a child needed shelter, would he break down the door? Would he take a moment's rest? Could he have a moment's peace with all these children still in misery? Standing outside the Walgreens with a stone in my hand. Standing outside with a stone in my hand. I ask myself, would Jesus understand? Make every sacrifice. Would he give all that he had to save his brother's life? Would he leave behind the ones who need him most? Or would he reach out for every desperate soul? Well, tell me, America, what would Jesus do? Tell me, now what would Jesus do? Had to walk this water in my shoes. A Greyhound bus was my getaway. I tried to hold my dear wife, but she got swept away. Will I roam until my dying day?
mean, what would Jesus do if he hadn't walked 1 mile in my shoes? Tell me, sister, what would Jesus do? Tell me what you're going to do if you hadn't walked 1 mile in my shoes.
That song, I didn't know I was making an album about Katrina, but I recorded that song in Nashville. A few weeks later, I was in Los Angeles. You couldn't go to the back to Louisiana because there was nowhere to. The government took over all the hotels. You couldn't pay to get into a hotel in Louisiana. And when I was there, I was sleeping in a rental car because there was just nowhere to stay. I'm talking about all of South Louisiana. You almost had to leave the state to get a hotel room. So I was hanging out in Los Angeles, and I was asked by a record label to go in and record the song for a benefit album. And in my hotel room, I wrote, what's it called, Baptized Dirty Water. And I wrote The Ghost of Marie Laveau,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of other songs, Faith. And I went down to the Village Recorder in Santa Monica and recorded it with Tony Brown up on drums. And we had one day session, really. One night we just went in and we blasted off Baptized in Dirty Water. And I guess, you know, that song, you know, it was just a one-take thing, a live thing. We're all in a small room and they were feeling it. I mean, there was something emotional about that whole thing. And a lot of musicians wanted to, you know, sometimes you have a side musician who's going to just play the arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody involved, you know, was moved, you know, to participate or to give something of themselves. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a very personal album, and I dedicated it to my mother who passed away just a couple of months after Katrina happened. And I was pretty down, and then I decided that I would get up, you know. I mean, you know, when you're knocked down on the canvas, and you're in the ring, and the guy's counting you out, you know, you got to find a reason to get up and stand up and go another round.
Yeah.
So instead of naming the album something like Dirty Water or some, you know, downer type of title, I named the album Rise, you know, because that's what I have to do personally. That's what people have to do when they're knocked down. You know, that's what New Orleans is going to have to find a way to do. Is rise, you know, rise above, you know, be able to fight another day. And so it's a very special album, and it is nominated for a Handy,
mm-hmm.
and that's a whole other story. I don't, you know, I've never won a Handy Award, and I'll probably be 85 years old before they finally give me one. But the way they do things over there, so I'm not expecting a whole lot, but I do appreciate the fact that they nominated it, and you know, I mean, that. To me, that song and that lyric and that performance of it is what the blues is supposed to be all about.
Come rushing in. sweet angel was not around. I searched all over for my baby, but you know she cannot be found. When I found my baby, they had her down at the burying ground.
That's the song. That's the one that's nominated for a Handy. And when we refer, just sometimes we say Blues Music Awards, sometimes we say Handy. It's the same thing. They changed the name. It used to be the Handy Awards. Now it's the Blues Music Awards.
May 10th at the Cook Convention Center here in Memphis, Tennessee.
That's right.
Blues Music Award, the Handy Awards.
So, you know, to me, I can hear a difference in his earlier work. And then this, and I guess, you know, sometimes that's the good that comes out of lots of devastation and destruction. You get some good blues songs.
Yeah, there's so many side stories to this. I mean, we can talk about the whole rap thing when he was going around with Ice-T, and he got shut down for doing that. And we didn't talk about any of that, but that was brought out in the interview. And
yeah, and we're running a little long, and this has been a different sort of show for Big Foamy Head. So the rest of the interview, it's available. Go to the website, follow the link on the post for this show, and take a listen to the rest of it. It's he's a very interesting guy. It was extremely nice of him to take this much time. I mean, you hear interviews on the radio with people, you don't hear this long an interview. It just really doesn't happen.
Fantastic detail, and it really brought the music to life.
Yeah, he shared a lot with us, and we definitely appreciate it. You're going to see him in more movies, hear more from him, and very
Chris
good.
Thomas King, look for him.
Yeah, and the only thing, I guess, audio note, he's walking and talking in Los Angeles So there's a lot of garbage in there. And
yeah, there's a lot of popping with the filters and everything we got running. So,
hopefully
people will listen through that.
Hopefully you'll forgive us for that, because we were just glad to get him on the phone and talk to him.
And we'll get back to format on our next show. Hopefully we'll have the beer haiku. We'll have the beer news segment with Rick Like. We'll have all the other things, the blogs that we're going to promote. And
all of that. All the usual suspects.
But show 70 will go down as a special show for the blues. And I want to thank James Spencer again for the beer, the La Folie. Wonderful beer.
Fantastic.
What a treat.
Thanks to Brew Bubba's for enlightening us with the other end, the brew house.
They'll rip open the bag and pour it in the fermenter and add yeast. Actually, I recommend people who are thinking about brewing beer, go buy yourself a fermenter.
Try it.
Throw some yeast in there.
You can't get any easier. I mean, it's just slightly harder than grabbing a six-pack out of the cooler at Walmart.
You don't need to go buy a big kettle to brew things in. You don't have to get all the ingredients and
just
all that.
Just a bucket.
Yeah, you could just see if you like doing it, you know?
Very inexpensive, good way to introduce yourself to the world of beer. Good stuff.
So what are you going to exit with?
Well, you know that little riff that we've been playing throughout the show when we transition from us talking? That is a song that Chris Thomas King covers of a Robert Johnson song, Death Letter Blues. So we will close out with that. And thanks for your time and attention for this different version. We were saying it was a sobering version of Big Foamy Head. Not something you usually get.
You may not be sober, but this was a sobering show.
Good stuff. And we'll see you next time.
Drive safe.
How you reckon you read? Say hurry, hurry. The girl you love the dead. I got a letter this morning. How do you reckon you read? Hurry, hurry. Because the girl you love is dead. Well, I grabbed the monster case. I took her down the road. When I got there, she would land on the cooling board. I grabbed up my suitcase and I took out down the road. When I got there, she would land on the cooling board. Well, I stood up right close. I looked down in her face. I said, the good old girl got to land on judgment day. Looked like it was 10,000 people standing around the burying ground. I didn't know her until he let her down. It looked like 10,000 standing around the burying ground. Well, didn't know that I loved her until it began to let her down. Slowly walked away. I said farewell, honey. I see you judgment day. I said, I folded up my arm and I slowly walked away. Farewell, farewell. I see you judgment day. Well, you know the blues ain't nothing but a whole old shaking sheet. Ain't satisfaction. What you do? I said the blues is a low down shaking sheet. If you ain't had them, well I hope you never thank you.
sound so clear, so nice and plain. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Someone don't love you, ain't satisfaction. Don't care what you do. It's so hard to love someone don't love you. Look like it ain't satisfaction. Don't care now what you do. Well, I woke up this morning, break of day, just hugging the pillow where she used to lay. I said, soon this morning, yeah, at the break of day. Well, I'm hugging the pillow where my good gal used to lay. I woke up this morning, feeling round for my shoes. By that I'm gonna have day walking blue.